Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Our speaker today is Justin Mandelbaum. Justin's the principal at Mandelbaum Properties, a family-owned real estate development and investment firm. He's spearheading the firm's signature mixed-use development, The Fifth, 40-story tower with 208 luxury apartments, a 137-key museum hotel, and an 8-screen all-recliner dine-in movie theater in downtown Des Moines. Justin is also the founder and president of Mainframe Studios, a 501c3 nonprofit arts organization whose mission is to create permanent, affordable workspace for artists of all disciplines. The nonprofit, which opened in 2018, is housed in a 150,000 square foot building to be fully renovated into 180 artist studios, and it's slated to become the largest nonprofit artist workspace building in the country. On a side note, if you go, they have their open houses every first Friday of the month, and it's really a great way to spend an evening in Des Moines. Justin's a native of Des Moines and spent 10 years living in New York, Tokyo, and Philadelphia before returning in 2008. He was the co-founder of Vespera Investments, a real estate development firm focused on socially and environmentally conscious community developments in the Northeast, and was on the acquisition teams at real estate private equity funds of Starwood Capital Group and Goldman Sachs. He earned his BS and BA degrees with concentrations in real estate and finance from the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania through the Huntsman Program in International Studies and Business. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Justin Mandelbaum.
Didn't realize I gave you the long bio. Appreciate you guys having me. We're going to give you a short presentation on Mainframe Studios. I have a lot to say about it, so I'm going to keep the presentation short. I'll open it up to Q&A afterwards. A couple weeks ago, I was interviewed by a Drake journalism student, and I gave him the intro to the project for like 30 minutes, and he couldn't wait to get out of there. So I'm really trying to keep it short this time. Okay, you know, when you think about Des Moines, we have a lot of great things going for us on the art side. Home to many nationally recognized art attractions. We have a world-class sculpture park. We have a great art center for a city of our size. We have Des Moines Performing Arts that's bringing in shows as early as anybody. You got the Social Club, which is as unique as any organization in town. You have an art festival that wins awards year after year. To me, the missing link is the permanent, affordable workspace for artists, our local artists, to create the work. And before I get there, I mean, when you think about the really hot cities right now, you know, everyone knows that Austin and Nashville are music cities, and Denver and Portland are beer cities. But when you think about art cities, you know, other than, you know, New York City, which is everything, and parts of Miami and L.A., and then some of the smaller towns like Santa Fe, but there really aren't any mid-sized cities that are really nationally known for the arts. And I believe that Des Moines is so close, and with just a little bit more effort, we can really become that city, and we can really brand ourselves as a city for the arts. And I believe that housing artists in workspace that they know isn't going to be converted into condos provides that base. And once you have that base of artists, you know, then you can start, who knows what can happen. We can paint all of our buildings and paint all of our utility boxes and maybe even turn the skywalks into a massive art experience that people actually enjoy walking through. And you know, we have the fundamentals here. When I started down this process way too long ago, I formed a Who's Who advisory committee, and the first thing they asked me was, you know, do we really even have artists in town? Because, you know, we don't know any. And, you know, that was sort of my premise from the beginning. If you're an artist in town, you know, unless you're showing in a gallery or a coffee shop, how do people even know that you're around and what work that you do? So we launched a demand survey online. We put our vision out there. We put sample floor plans out there, sample pricing. and we asked them all sorts of questions. And we stopped counting when over 425 artists filled out our survey. And the really interesting part about it was nearly 80% of those artists either worked out of their homes or had no studios. And to me, and the pitch that I make, at least to the corporate donors, is that's an untapped economic resource that we have in our city that like nobody knows about. And when you combine those artists under one roof, now you're transforming it into an economic driver because it serves to attract the creative class to Des Moines, by extension, young professionals who want to be by the creative class, businesses that are looking for that young professional talent to attract and retain, or businesses that are looking to be in an arts community, not to mention makes life more interesting for you and me. So the demand is certainly there. So our mission, as Tim mentioned, is to provide permanent, affordable workspace to artists of all disciplines. It's real simple. We bought a building. The address is 900 Keogh. You guys probably drive by it all the time. It's like the biggest, ugliest building downtown that a lot of people don't think about. And we're working to transform it into an arts building. And right now we've done 3 out of 5 floors, so not all the windows are in quite yet. Certainly the lights and signage aren't up, or everybody would actually know about it. So big picture, it's 160,000 square feet. We'll have 180 artist studios when we're all said and done. That includes some office space for arts-related nonprofits as well. We have a commercial kitchen. We have event rental space that can seat up to 250 people. People are getting married in our building, as it turns out. A lot of corporate events as well. We also have a small boardroom. For those of you who don't know where it is, it's right, there's 235. It's right where Keogh turns into 9th Street. Keogh is a big artery into downtown, has more cars than any other street, 25,000 cars a day. Our vision is to transform Central Iowa's art scene into an economically and financially self-sustaining driver for the town that can serve as a national model. This is a photo of our event space when we bought the building. Went through a big renovation. That's what it looks like today. And really throughout the building, you'll see concrete floors, white walls, and we let the artists take care of making it look interesting. Again, after the building was demolished, that's what it looked like on the inside. We put in all those windows. There's literally concrete walls. And that's what an empty studio would look like today. As Tim mentioned, we have monthly open studio events. This will be easy to remember. First Friday of every month, 5 to 8 p.m. How many people have been to one yet? All right, so about a quarter or so. So would encourage you all to come. They're all different. Every month we have a theme. And it's a great event. We get about 1,000 people a night at these things. The background for all this is a project that I did in my previous life in Lowell, Massachusetts, a town about 45 minutes north of Boston. And my former business partner and I had the opportunity to buy a 250,000 square foot mill building that, long story short, we turned into 250 artist studios and 50 live work lofts. And we learned a very painful lesson with this building. It was technically a for-profit. It was really a no-profit. I'm out of it now, thankfully. My former partner is trying to convert it into a nonprofit. And the lesson that we learned is something that we probably should have known going into it, but we were too dumb. But it's something that you see all across the country, and that is artists make a neighborhood cool or a building cool and eventually get priced out for a higher and better use. And if you think about it, artists historically were priced out of Manhattan, and they went to Brooklyn, and they got priced out of Brooklyn, and they're going to cities like Portland and Austin. And a simple Google search would show that they're getting priced out like every week out of some building in those kind of cities. And what we learned in our building is we had offered these artists, we told them, permanent affordable studio space as kind of our slogan. And we were faced with a situation where we had to upgrade all of our life safety systems and replace the roof So we had to put well over $1 million into the building. And so we were put in a position where we either had to raise rents on the artist to make it unaffordable. We could kick the artist out and try to get, you know, credit tenants, or we could sell the building to someone who would do that or who would convert it into condos, or we could, I guess, continue to own it and take it in the shorts. And, you know, we had made a commitment to these artists, and some of them became our friends, and we ended up just taking in the shorts. We sold half the building to our previous boss, who's a billionaire, and he put $1.5 million into the building and kind of saved it. But that illustrates why having artist studios is not really a sustainable venture for a for-profit building. And it's even happening here in Des Moines. The most recent example, if you guys know Harbach Lofts, that's where St. Kilda's is. Well, before that, that was Art 316 for 17 years. It was artist studios. We have another building called Fit Studios at 15th and Walnut. That's been artist studios for a number of years. A couple of years ago, it was purchased by a real estate developer, Jay Christensen, who does a lot of apartments in town. And, you know, the writing is on the wall for that building. And I don't hold that against any of the building owners. We live in a capitalist society. They ought to have the right to maximize the value of their buildings. That's why we're doing this as a nonprofit. And we think that we found a new model. And as I mentioned before, we have a financially self-sustaining business model. And what we found with this building in particular, if we do it as a nonprofit, which we have, is if we can raise the money up front to pay for the building and pay for the build out, then going forward, even though we charge really low rents to artists, those rents are enough to cover all of our operating expenses, have a $75,000 annual reserve fund that we just set aside every year, and still have north of $100,000 that we can put into our own endowment. And that's at 85% occupancy. It's conservatively underwritten. So we know that it's financially self-sustaining in a major way. And we believe that there's nothing complicated about this model. This is something that other cities can copy as well. And it works for two fundamental reasons. One, there's no mortgage, no permanent financing on the building, so we're not making principal and interest payments, because if we did, that'd take care of the money pretty quickly. And two, no developer, no investors making any money off this. And even though we're developers, we've pledged not only never to make a dime, but never to charge a dime. So we handle all the construction management we've done in-house, all the development services, property management. We just do that. We pay our staff how we normally pay our staff, and that's part of our donation. We've also made a cash gift. So it's a labor of love for us, and frankly, I got to just get it done and focus on my other stuff. There's way too many numbers on this page, but I'll point out just a few things right now. So we're in phase one. We've developed 3 out of 5 floors. We have 71 artist studios right now. And big picture today, if I can find this, on an operational basis, we're losing $175,000 a year, $15,000 a month. We're bleeding. That's before donations. We've got donations coming in, so we're not like imploding or anything. But from a cash flow basis, it's not working. Phase three, what I've talked about at full build out at 85% occupancy, you'll see we have cash flow of $195,000 a year. 75 of that goes to our annual reserves. $120,000 goes into our own endowment. So in other words, it operates like a real estate company, but it's a nonprofit, and the nonprofit structure allows us to stand the test of time. This building can be around for generations and generations. As long as people make art, this building will survive because there's no outside pressure to sell it to a condo developer, and we don't rely on donations every year to keep us going. So project status, if you go to the building today, you'll see we have 65 non-residential art studios. No one lives in our building. 6 art-related nonprofits. That includes nonprofits like the Greater Des Moines Music Coalition, KFMG radio station, community support advocates, and others. We have over 24 art disciplines. What's interesting is 20% of these artists come out of town, from out of town, whether they've moved here permanently or if they live throughout Iowa and come when they can to Des Moines because they want to be part of this community. We have the event rental space, two more floors to go. Phase one is full. This presentation actually is a little outdated. We have a 100-person wait list, and the next two floors will have about 100 studios. So we believe we could fill it today, you know, if we had the money to actually build out the rest of the space. And the 100-person wait list is folks who have filled out a detailed pre-lease application, have submitted a $100 non-refundable deposit. So it's a real wait list. We have dozens more who said, you know, rationally, hey, when you have more studios, let me know. A quote from Jeff Fleming, who's a board member, Mainframe Studios provides a unique cultural institution even larger cities don't have. And I think that's one of the things that I'm most proud of about this is this is a nonprofit that really doesn't exist throughout the country. And I think that's pretty special for Des Moines, another feather in the cap for our city. As Tim mentioned, you know, we're slated to become the largest nonprofit art studio building in the nation. It's not really saying much. It's a pretty low bar. There aren't a lot of the art studio buildings in the country are for profit. We really believe that Des Moines can be known as a city for the arts. And this photo was taken from one of our artists. You've probably seen those photos on Facebook. They're incredible. So we have, but it's basically a $13 million project. We've raised nearly $9 million. We have about $4 million to go. We're revamping our capital campaign for phase two. Steve Lacey and Sue Gurati are chairing that, and Nixon Virginia Lordson, who are our $1 million donors, are the honorary chairs at this point. We have broad community support so far. The Lordsons I mentioned are our biggest givers, our Quick Trip Community Foundation and Meredith. Polk County has actually done over $300,000, so thank you, Mike McCoy, for that. And all your taxpayers in Polk County, you guys have been great supporters. I appreciate that. So that kind of sums it up in a nutshell. Happy to answer any questions, whether about the process or about the open studio events. Otherwise, I appreciate you guys for having me today.
So part of your model is affordable rents for artists. Typically, just give us an example of what kind of fees they're paying to be in this building.
Yeah, that's a great question. Okay, so our standard pricing when we opened the building, which would have been a year and a half ago, is $7 a square foot per year plus utility. So to put that in perspective, a 350 square foot studio would be like $202 a month plus utilities of another probably $30 a month. We have studios as small as 150 square feet, so they're paying about $100 a month. And then we have some as big as 3,000 square feet. So it all sort of depends, but that sweet spot is really about 400 square feet. That'd be a standard studio. As part of our model, in the leases that the artists have, we say that we're raising rents 3% a year. And we had our first raise on January 1 of this year. So now it's $7.21 a square foot per year. And to put that in perspective, market's like almost double that. Yeah.
I noticed in your financial projection that once you reach phase three, you'd be putting aside about a $200,000 surplus.
Yep.
What will the nonprofit do with that over a few years?
That's a good question, and that we don't give a lot of thought to, actually. But I think big picture, where I see it headed is for the first, you know, we probably need to build like a $2 million endowment just to have. That really serves as a reserve fund in addition to the $75,000 a year that we're putting away. Put away enough money so we know that whatever happens to the building, you know, we're safe and we can make improvements in the meantime. Then after that, I mean, if we think 10, 20, 30 years down the road, I could see us supporting other arts organizations in town. Really would be like a mini Bravo. That's where I'd like to see it headed. And then in our numbers, we're showing, you know, This clicker is obviously a little slow, but we show 85% occupancy, 15% of vacancy factor. That's really more, you know, we've been running at 100% occupancy or near to it. So we call it vacancy slash free rent of 140 grand that we do basically need-based discounts to artists as well.
Nonprofits as well, or to artists?
Artists and nonprofits, but the nonprofits in our building, they're all arts-related nonprofits. I'd be remiss, by the way, if I didn't mention Salsa Des Moines is in our building, and they put on a lot of great programs and free classes as well.
Yes. As an art teacher my whole career, I'm very excited about this opportunity, and when I heard about it, I was over the top. Thank you for doing that. And my second comment is there anybody left in the Fitch building?
Yeah. I think the Fitch building is still going. In fact, we only have, to my knowledge, one artist who moved. Well, two artists that I know of who moved from the Fitch building. So I think that building, as far as I know, is still going and is still full, I would assume. Yeah.
Justin, how was the building originally purposed?
Oh, that's a great question. Thank you. So the building was built in the late 70s for Northwestern Bell as a data center that had a lot of mainframe computers, hence our name, Mainframe Studios. It was designed by Chick Herbert, same gentleman who did the Civic Center, right at the same time. I can't remember which one opened first, but you'll see a lot of similarities in the architecture as well. Over the years, it transitioned from mainframe computers to a call center. So if you can imagine, you had folks working in that building with basically no windows. And then they had a fire in, I believe, January of 2010 or 11 on the top floor. And it sort of cleared everyone out. And they had been phasing folks out anyway and moving them down the street to the CenturyLink building. And after that fire, they took everyone out, and then it sat empty for a number of years, and then we purchased it in late 2014.
Thank you. Yeah. Are there currently any partnerships between like community schools and you guys, or other like youth nonprofit art organizations?
So I'd say there are no formal partnerships at this time. We do bring in some school groups, not as many as we'd like. We don't have our bus lane put in yet, but there have been tours of the building, and we're certainly open to partnerships as well. One challenge that we have is in order to have a financially self-sustaining organization, a key component of that is having a staff-light organization. So we only have one paid staff person, our executive director, Siobhan Spain. We basically outsource everything else. Community Foundation does our books. But because we are a staff-light organization, our only formal programming is the first Friday studio events. We're now just getting into a third Thursday event as well. But other than that, we look to the artists to put on their own programming. And in fact, there's one artist who brings in children after school for programs as well. But that's a challenge that we have. But I think especially once we get stabilized and get the rest of the building built out, you know, then I think there's some great opportunities out there for partnerships. And certainly in the meantime as well, I don't know what your background is, but if you have something in mind, I'd be certainly willing to.
We work full-time for Habitat for Humanity.
Nice. So excellent.
It's a nonprofit role.
Yeah. Great. Yes, please.
So across the way is 1201 Q, the hovel that's like that triangle building.
Yeah.
So is, I'm sorry.
The old Greyhound.
The old Greyhound.
Well,
next to it.
You're thinking of the two-story brick building? Or the...
And like the 10,000 square foot building. It's like three buildings in one, sort of. Is there any magical something that Mainframe could like sprinkle onto it to make it incredible?
we're talking about the same building, right? The brick building?
Yeah, it's like that cute triangle that just, you know, everything's new around it except for...
Right.
Waiting for a fire.
yeah. That's a tough one.
Any lower leads as to, because they're asking for $2 million to do the, they did stage one, like analysis on it or whatever, $2 million to renovate at minimum, $1 million up front. And it just seems like, who could do that?
Yeah.
And by who, I mean, like, who's, I mean, could that be maybe secondary or part of other arts or leveling it?
Well, I mean, that building should stay, right? I mean, it's a cool building. I hope that mainframe can play a role and that mainframe can be a catalyst for that neighborhood. You know, the building has a lot of challenges, obviously. It's an old building. There's no real parking to it. But I'd love to see a developer take that on and do something cool, and hopefully mainframe's improving the neighborhood to a point that businesses could sustain themselves in that building. So.
As long as we branch into other development issues, Chris Hensley and Steve Lacey have an interesting editorial in this morning's paper in opposition to the federal courthouse on the old YMCA site. I wonder what your opinion of that.
We could spend a lot of time on that, but big picture, I have very strong opinions about that. I also have a bias in that I have a financial interest in one of the courthouse buildings, so I'll say that up front. But to me, two things. One, the community has invested $70 million into the Riverwalk over the last decade. And in my opinion, the Riverwalk, right or wrong, is a little bit of a dud right now. I think that the vision behind it was great, and that folks wanted to turn it into a Grays Lake-type attraction, and we're not there yet. That doesn't mean that we're not going to get there. I think that the YMCA site is like the key piece of that, because it's a large piece of land that connects Wells Fargo Arena and the skate park and the Lordson Skate Park and the Rotary Park to the north, connects it to HubSpot and Court Avenue and Principal Park to the south. So I think that site is of critical importance. And I think if it's a dynamic mixed-use development that can really serve as a link that can make the Riverwalk the vision that everyone has wanted. So I think it's the wrong site for the courthouse. Separately, a little insight into it. You know, they want to spend $137 million on it. They're adding 40,000 square feet more than what they have in the existing two buildings. And believe it or not, they're accommodating 36 fewer employees by their own report. So to me, for a federal government to spend $137 million on that, it's absolutely nuts. And if you walk into our building on any day, it's like empty. It's like ghost town. And it illustrates, not to get too political, but it illustrates like what sort of problems we have as a country when there's really no one on a federal level, like in this particular instance, who's looking at the numbers and saying, is this a good use of taxpayer money or a bad use of taxpayer money? And I suspect that historically, the judges saw the courthouse building in Cedar Rapids and thought, you know, why don't we have that in Des Moines? And it kind of went up the channels and you know, the congressional delegation advocated for it and we got it and now the money has been allocated. So I think that's like a fundamental problem. And, you know, to Steve and Christine's point, I think that if the city and the business leaders and community advocates keep on writing letters to our congressional delegation, I'm confident that we can get that thing like anywhere else. Sorry.
And by the way, it's generally safe to be political in this crowd.
Fair enough. People are raising their hands in back that haven't gotten to it.
I just wanted to express my appreciation for what you're doing. The presentation was really good.
Thank you.
One of the things that I really like about it, I had a friend that lived here in Des Moines probably 15 years ago. She was a young artist, and she's now out in New York, you know, it would be really great to have a city that keeps their talent instead of exporting it.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, that what you're doing does a great service to Iowa and especially Des Moines in terms of cultural value. And, you know, that so often that is completely overlooked when we're building towers and we're, you know, highways and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the cultural value is significant.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And hopefully this building will serve to attract people from New York to Des Moines when they realize that New York's too expensive anyway. Yes, please.
Justin, I'm curious, you have one head employee in this nonprofit here.
Yes.
Now, how are you handling all the myriad other things that need to be done? Like a building manager, building maintenance, development, fundraising, grant writing, you name it. I mean, there's an enormous amount of things. That's a lot more than one person can reasonably be expected to do, I think.
Yeah, that's more job for one person. I'm sorry?
So how are you handling that?
Well, we have a board, and we have me and my family and our staff as well. And I play a very active role on the fundraising side and the development side. Our property manager helps with building maintenance issues. Our executive director is really focused on the tenants and the open studios. That's her fundamental role. And she's playing a role in the fundraising as well. We also have a fundraising consultant who's helping with the overall strategy and a separate grant writer as well. Yep.
Question on most of the artists that are currently in the building now, how do they use it? Do most of them create there, or do they use it as a venue for sales, or all of the above?
Yeah, it's all of the above. So the building's a 24/7 key card access building. It also has a directory code where prospective buyers or clients or whatever can come and visit. The doors are technically open, I think, from like 9 to 5 p.m. every day, just because there's a lot of people going out. But really, the building is not open to the public, per se, other than the first Friday events and the third Thursday events. Everyone in there is using it as a workspace. And then, depending on the studio, some look more like a retail than they are. So, like, if you go into the main level, John Bosley of Bos Prince, he's at the farmer's market. His studio is 1,500 square feet. Most of that is retail space, but he's making everything in the back. So it really just depends on the artist. Great. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's a tradition of First Friday to give our speakers a copy of the Gay Men's Chorus.
That's great. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm the kind of guy who puts a CD and it stays in forever. So.
Oh. Appreciate that.